Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Ayin Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material access by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 3 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Beis. You will notice a house shape and an indication on the side to the side of the Gemara text, a beis. This is the second of two sources that deal with a Jew and an idol worshiper in the context of borrowing and loaning money. The topic heading on the side that you might see in the margin, called the Nosei, reads, Halva beribis bein Yisrael v'nochri v'nizgayir hanochri, an interest-bearing loan between a Jew and an idol worshiper, and the idol worshiper at a certain point converts to Judaism. Now the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Yisrael shelova mois min hanochri beribis. A Jew borrowed money from an anochri, an idol worshiper, with the intent of paying him interest. V'zokfon olav b'milveh. Rashi, on the second line from the top, explains this term, v'zokfon olav b'milveh, li'achar zman, after a while, chishev imoy al horibis, v'zokif hakul b'yachad b'milveh. They calculated how much the interest would be, plus the principal, and then wrote the entire amount into a document, v'kosav lo shtar aleihem, and concerning that amount, a document was prepared. Kach v'kach ani chayev l'ploni. In other words, the entire sum was written as one sum, such and such amount. The Jew has to pay the nochri. And the Gemara goes on, and the story goes on as well. V'nis gayer, this nochri converted. Im kodem shnizgayer zokfan alav b'milveh. If before his conversion, this lender amassed the entire sum, the interest and the principal as one sum. If prior to his converting, they did that. The term we use here was zokfan alav b'milveh. So he was still an idol worshiper at the time that the entire sum was calculated. Then afterwards he then converted. Goyva es hakeren v'goyva es haribis. That individual now as a convert is entitled to collect the entire sum. The entire sum was owed to him while he was still a Gentile, still an idol worshiper, and hence there was no issue of ribis, of no problem, no issur, no prohibition of interest at that point in time. If first he converted, that is, the lender converted, and then the entire sum was calculated as a loan, the lender, who is now a righteous convert, he's entitled to collect the principal, but not entitled to collect the interest. He converted before the interest was calculated as part of the principal. So the interest remained a separate unit of money at a time that he had already converted to Judaism. V'chein nochri shelova mois miYisrael beribis. And similarly, an idol worshiper that borrowed money from a Jew with the intent of paying the Jew interest, v'zokfan alav b'milveh v'nizgayer, and the sum owed by the nochri to the Jew interest plus principal was converted into one sum, and along the way the borrower, the nochri, converted. Imad shalon is gayer zokfan alav b'milveh. If prior to his conversion, the borrower's conversion, the entire sum was calculated as one, goyve es hakeren v'goyve es haribis, the Jew is entitled to collect the principal and the interest. Im mishnis gayer zokfan alav b'milveh. If after he converted, then the interest and principal were amalgamated into one unit, goyve es hakeren, the Jew lender is entitled to collect only the principal. Veinu goyve es haribis, and he's not to collect the interest. Rabbi Yosi Oimer, Nochri Shalova Mois Miyisrael Baribis. Rabbi Yosi is referring to the Roman numeral number 2 case. If you look carefully at our markings, you can see there's a dot underline under Nochri Shalova, and you see that above as well. The case where the Gentile, where the idol worshipper, borrowed money from a Jew in order, with the intent of paying interest. Rabbi Yossi says, regarding that case, Benkach u Benkach gave us a keren v'goyva es haribis. Whether the conversion took place after Zogfan Alova Milveh, or even if it took place before Zogfan Alova Milveh, Zogfan Alova Milveh, namely, even in a case where he first converted and then the entire sum was calculated as a loan, the Jew lender is entitled to collect the entire sum. Omar Rova, Omar Rav Chista, Omar Rav Huna, Halacha Rabbi Yosi. Here you see Rava ruling like Rabbi Yosi. Omar Rava, my time under Rabbi Yosi. What is the reason for Rabbi Yosi? Namely, that even if he first converted and only later the entire sum, the principal with interest, was calculated as one sum, why is it that even under those circumstances that the malva, the Jew, is allowed to collect that the entire amount? Answer: Kedei shelo yomru, so as to avoid people saying b'shvil ma'osav nizgayer zeh. If you were to rule like the Tanakhama, like the first opinion, and not like Rabbi Yosi, what is the result? The result would be that if you convert before, if the borrower converts before the entire sum is calculated as one, he saves money. He won't have to pay the interest. That would lead people to think that, his conversion to Judaism was not a genuine conversion. He converted only to save money, to save paying the interest. So Rabbi Yosi, in anticipating that, he says, even if he first converts and only afterwards the interest is attached to the principal, he'll have to pay the principal the interest as well anyway. Tanu Rabbanan. Before we continue further with this Tanaic source, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading. It reads Shtar Shekosov Bo Ribis, a loan document in which reference is made to paying interest. Machloikis Tanoim im Amrinon Denitan Livois HaKeren. That shtar was prepared in a prohibited fashion. In other words, you can't extend a loan with interest to begin with and then record it. You can't extend loans with interest at all. But here we have a document that makes reference to a principal amount and interest that is to be paid. There we'll see a disagreement between Tanoim whether the lender is entitled to collect the principal. O Amrinon de Kansina Natero, Mishu Misura, Viafa Keren, Lo Goive. Or we might take the approach, the other opinion says, that we fine him and prevent him from collecting even the principal. And that's referred to kansinon, which means impose a fine, hetera, upon that which is by letter of the law allowed to be collected. There's nothing wrong with collecting the principal of the loan, but we impose a fine because there is isur, because he did something forbidden. And the result, as we said, he wouldn't be able to collect even the principal. The Gemara, following the presentation of this machlokas tanayim and the explanation that we just suggested of kansinun hetera mishumi surah, will then lead into another case of a problematic shtar that we refer to as a shtar mukdam. What is there to say about that in relation to what we're talking about now, namely kansinon hetera otu isura? We'll be a little more detailed when we get to that, but let's first start the discussion. Tanu Rabbonon, shtar shekosuv boi ribis, a loan document in which is recorded the expectation of paying interest as well as the principal. Kainsin oisoi v'ena geva lo es hakeren v'lo es haribis. Divrei Rebbe Meir. We kainsin, as we said before, we impose a fine upon this lender and he cannot collect the principal and certainly not the interest. That's Rebbe Meir's opinion. We've dashed underlined key phrases that ena geva es hakeren. That's Rebbe Meir. Rachamim omrim geva es hakeren v'ena geva es haribis. The Chachamim disagree and allow the lender to collect the principal, but not the interest. B'mai komifligi, what's the basis of this disagreement? Rabbi Meir Sofar, kansinon hetero mishum isura. Rabbi Meir says that we impose a fine upon him, restrict him from collecting even the heter, even the permitted part of the loan, namely the principal, because he went so far as to include in the loan that which is usur, the ribis. So he loses out on everything. Verabonan savri lo kansina netero mishum isura. The Rabbonan said we don't impose such a fine. That which is allowed to be collected, he collects the principal. That which is usur, the interest, he does not collect. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei hemshech. Hemshech means this is a continuation of the discussion. Man Tano de Kotoni, who would the Tano be that teaches Shtar Mukdam Eina Geva Klau Milakuchais? Let's say a word or two about a Shtar Mukdam. A Shtar Mukdam is a document, a financial document. Let's talk about a simple case of a loan. Someone loaned money, and a date is written into the loan document. Generally speaking, the borrower from that point on is indebted to the lender, and any properties that he might sell after that loan are subject to a lien of this lender. After all, I lent money to you, you owe me money. And as such, your property becomes indebted to the loan as well. And if you sell that property, we're talking about a loan that's recorded in a document, that property, even if it's sold, is indebted to the loan. So that purchasers will have to yield their property to me, the lender, because the debt that I have to collect predates the purchaser's acquisition of the land. What happens if a shtar is wrongfully dated? Namely, instead of the 15th of the month, it's dated the 1st of the month. But the loan wasn't extended at the 1st of the month. The loan was extended 2 weeks later on the 15th of the month. So you're dealing with what we call a predated document. People who bought land from the borrower between the 1st and the 15th are not indebted to the loan. The loan wasn't extended until the 15th. But if I have a shtar like that, a shtar mukdam, I potentially could wave it in the face of those purchasers, people that bought between the 1st and the 15th and claim that here my shtar says, my document indicates I have an earlier claim on the property. You shouldn't have bought it. If you bought it, you have to yield it to me. That is, of course, forbidden. A shtar muktam is forbidden. The issue that the Gemara will touch upon is, all right, you can't collect from those properties that were sold before the loan was extended. You can't collect from the, we'll call the borrower's properties that he may have sold prior to his receiving the loan. What about the properties that he sold, in fact, after the 15th, after the loan was actually extended? Now, let's turn to the Gemara. Tanan Hossam. Actually, we should just review the note that we wrote on the side, the Nose. We're looking for the author of the Tana that says, Shtar Muktam Eino Goyve Klal Milukuchos, that an predated loan document is not, he, the lender, is not entitled to collect at all from any of the purchasers. Who would author that? And we say from any of the purchasers, even those that purchased after the loan was extended. So now the Gemara, Tanan Hossam, Shtore Choyv Hamukdomim Psulin. Predated loan documents are void, and they do not, in that case, the lender cannot collect from any purchasers. V'hamulchorim Sherim. If someone postdated the document, in other words, you have a lender here that actually limits his collection abilities. He's limiting himself. Whereas if the loan was extended on the 15th of the month and he wrote a shtar that indicates that the loan was given on the 25th of the month, properties that he could have legitimately collected, he won't be able to collect now. Any properties that were sold from between the 15th and the 25th, he would be entitled to, but he won't be able to collect them because his loan document is dated from the 25th. Okay, so you're not hurting anyone other than yourself. So it's kosher, the document is okay. But we want to focus on the mukdomim. Mukdomim amai psulim. Why do you render the predated document totally void with regard to collecting from any purchasers? Nehi delo gavu mizman rishon nigvu mizman sheni. Granted that the lender cannot collect from the earlier purchasers, those that purchased before the loan, those that purchased from the after the first date before the loan was extended. Let the lender, however, collect from those who purchased from the borrower, mizman sheni, meaning from the date of the actual loan. And yet, this Tanaic source says that the lender cannot collect even from those that bought property from the borrower after the loan was extended in reality. Omar of Shimon ben Lakish. We have two approaches to as to who the author of this is. Reb Shimon ben Lakish says, "B'machlekes shnuya." This source, though there's no name, it's not a unanimous opinion. It's a source taught. It's an opinion that's part of a controversy. That means b'machlokes means a disagreement. Shnuy, it's taught as an opinion that's part of a disagreement. V'Rebbe Meir, it is Rebbe Meir. Notice we have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text. We indicated before in the Shtar Shekosov Bo Ribis, Rebbe Meir there was the opinion you lose out on everything. Here too, the lender loses out on all his collection powers from purchasers. That is consistent with Rebbe Meir from before. For Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Afilu Teimo Rabbonon, this source that says Shtorei Chayv Mukdomim Psulim can be understood even as being authored by the Rabbonon. They will, in this case, be machmir to prevent collection from purchasers altogether. Gzeiro shemo yigve mizman rishon. If we allow collecting from the second date means from the time of the actual loan onwards, we're fearful that the lender will attempt to collect from the date, the first date, namely the date that's the early date that was wrongfully recorded in the document. So that in this particular situation, there's a fear of going too far. So even the Rabbanon would impose a restriction. Hahu gavra, the mashkin le pardeso lechavre leeser shonim. Here we have an incident that we recorded on the side. So let's read our introductory note before going further in the Gemara text. Under the Nose, it reads, Malve Shekibel Pardes, a lender of money that received a grove of fruit trees, Kemashkon, as collateral. V'achar Shalashonim, and after 3 years, we should point out that it was a mashkon that he was entitled to hold on for 10 years, and after 3 years, v'achar gimel shonim iyem alalova, he threatened the borrower, who's the actual owner of this pardes, this grove of trees. The lender threatened the borrower, shim lo yimkor lo, who yitoin shehu koneu. If you don't sell it to me, once again, if the lender says, the threat is, the lender saying to the borrower, if you don't sell it to me, I, the lender, will claim it as mine, that I bought it from you. V'yesh lo cheskas gimel shonim. He has been there for 3 years. That's a time period where the court won't ask the owner, the current owner, where is your deed? People are not expected to hold on to documents more than 3 years. So the lender here is putting the borrower in a very tough position. He's blackmailing him. If you sell it to me, good. And if not, I'll claim I bought it from you and I'll win the case. Because I have what's called a cheskas gimel shonim. That's use of a field for 3 years, which strengthens one's claim of ownership. So now we turn to the Gemara. Starting again, third wide line in the middle. Hahu gavra demishkin le pardesa lechavre leser shonim. There was an individual who borrowed money. He gave as a mashkon, as a collateral to the lender, a pardes, a vineyard, for 10 years. Ochlet lashoni. 3 years went by. The malve, the lender, was benefiting, was eating the fruits for the last 3 years. Omar le. At that point, the malve says, Imazvinis lea lehale mutav, if you sell it unto me, then good. I'm willing to buy it now from you, and that'll be great. The elo, and if you don't agree to sell it to me, kavishna lo lishtar mashkanta, I will hide the document indicating that my presence here is in terms of collateral. The amino, and I will claim lekuchi biyadi, that I purchased it, and I lost the shtar mechira, the bill of sale, and I will come forward with a claim that I've been here for 3 years. And as we said before, people are not expected to guard their documents beyond a period of 3 years. Ozal, now this. So what happens now? We have a borrower that's being threatened. Ozal kom akne livno koton. The owner of this kerem, of this vineyard, arose and he gave it, that property, as a gift to his son, a minor. The hodar zovna nihale. And then he conducted a sale. He sold it to the lender. Now, at this point, the sale is not a sale because the grove of trees or the vineyard has been given already to this borrower's son. So, at this point, the lender, the borrower, would be selling something that's not his. He previously gave it to his son. Zvini vadai lo havi zvini. As far as a sale is concerned, the sale to the lender, it's certainly not a sale. We have to point out that when the borrower sold it to the lender, he, the borrower, included a guarantee that if anything should happen to the field and you do not retain it or gain access to it, then I will make good on it. That's achrayus. So as far as the sale is concerned, it's certainly not a sale. Zuzi, the money, though, the money that the borrower received from the lender for purchase of the vineyard, kemilva b'shtar domu v'goyve minichosem mishuabodim, oidilmo kemilva alpeh domu v'yeno goyve minichosem mishuabodim. How do we view the debt that this borrower has to the lender as far as the purchase price, the purchase money that he, the borrower, received? He owes the lender that amount of money, the value, whatever he gave him, that cash value is a debt that the borrower owes to the lender. Don't confuse this with the original loan. That's not what we're discussing. We're discussing the guaranteed return of purchase price if anything should happen to the field. The lender, of course, isn't going to get the field. But what about the money that he paid? Do we view the money that he paid as a written bill of debt? It's a milva bishtar. And the power of a milva bishtar is that the one who has that debt to collect can collect even from Mishubadim. What are Mishubadim? Those are the properties that subsequent purchasers bought. So that if we have a recorded date of the sale, anyone who bought other properties from this from the seller was our original borrower of the money, anyone who bought property subsequent to that, to this particular transaction, are indebted to the lender. The lender is trying to recover his purchase price, his purchase money. So if we view the guarantee written into the document, the bill of sale, as a milva bishtar, so the purchaser of land will have recourse to seek compensation even from mishubadim, from those that bought land after the sale. Oidilma, or possibly it's considered like an oral debt. An oral debt, someone loans money to a borrower, but it's not recorded in a document, so the lender does not have recourse to seek compensation from subsequent purchasers of land from that particular love, particular borrower. And that's what the second possibility is, the Odilma that we read, that is Kemilva Pedomu, it's like an oral loan, the Eino Geve Minichosu Mishubonim, and the purchaser in this case would have no recourse to seek compensation from the subsequent purchasers. Omar Abaye, the Lav Hainu de Rabbi Asi, in order to resolve this question, Abaye says, is this not that which Rav Asi dealt with? The Omar Rav Asi, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Moida bishtar shekosvoi eino tzorech lekaimoi v'goyve minechosim mishuabodim. When there's a disagreement between a malve and a love, and a love, a borrower, acknowledges that he wrote the shtar, he might continue to claim, but I paid it up already. Rav Asi says that at the point that you admit you wrote the shtar, it's considered as if it's verified. That's considered the equivalent of a court verification. That's what the term eino tzorch lekaimo means. So the person that holds the debt, having the debtor acknowledge that he wrote it, empowers the creditor to collect from subsequent purchased properties. Rashi at the top, Moida b'shtar shikos, so me'achar shaloive moida shishtar choiv shahotzilov shtar emesu. Once the borrower concedes that the bill of collection that is being that is produced now is a shtar emes, an honest document, honest in the sense that he wrote it up. Ein hamalvitzorch lechazer achar edim achsumim bo lahoirach hasimosun lekaimo. The lender doesn't have to seek out the witnesses that signed it and have them testify to verify their signatures. And here too in our case, this borrower concedes, I sold it to the lender, I sold the property, the vineyard to him with a guarantee. V'im hashtar botel le'inyan hamachira shtar matona shikot moi. And even though the document is void as far as a sale document because it was preceded by the gift given to his son, lo botel inyan achrayas, it's not void regarding the guarantee to have the money returned. Omar le Rava. So Rava, he responds to Abaye. In our markings, you might notice that on the last line of Omid Aleph, we dashed underline Abaye. We have a dashed underline under Rava here as well. Rava is responding to Abaye. Abaye wanted to say that the purchaser, in our case, is entitled to collect from Mishubodim, from subsequent purchasers that bought land from the seller. Rava says, you can't compare our case to Rav Asi's teaching. Omar le Rava, mi domi. How can you compare them? Hasam, in the Rav Asi's case, you're dealing with a fairly straightforward loan written out with a borrower of money and a lender, and the borrower acknowledges that he wrote the shtar. He might claim beyond that, but I paid it up already. But the malva is holding on to the shtar that is totally, that's verified. That shtar, that whole arrangement, nitan li kosev, was permitted to be written at the outset, at the beginning. It was a legitimate loan. Ha-ha. In our case of the sale of the field that had already been sold to the borrower's son, that had been given as a gift to the borrower's son, it's a document that was not allowed to have been written at the outset. So that the entire document, the foundation of the document, is faulty. So what Rava is pointing out, contrary to Abaye, we saw in the Rashi this point was made very clear, the distinction between the sale aspect of the shtar and the guarantee written therein. Rava says you can't split them apart. This shtar, in our case with the vineyard being sold to the lender, is a shtar that should not have been written at the outset. Yosef Mremar v'Ka'omar Loha Shmaitza. Mremar was sitting and saying over this teaching. We'll see, Ravina responds in a moment. He was saying over Rava's point of Lo Nitan Li Kosev. It was a document that should not have been written at the outset. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, there are new geometric forms that appear. So on the side of the Gemara, we have, first of all, our Nosei topic heading, which we're already familiar with, but we'll read it anyway, followed by a Mivnei structural note. In our margin, we've written, Hesberu Shel Rava Bahu Maisi de Pardisa, Rava's explanation regarding that incident with the vineyard, Tahave Shtar Shel Onitan Likosev, it was a document that should not have been written, V'lochein Eino Geve Klal Milukuchos, and therefore it cannot be the lender in that case who bought the pardes cannot collect from any mishubadah, for any purchasers. Under the Mivne note, the structural note, the triangle appears, and we indicate ma'akava, an attempt to keep track of a give and take style Gemara, with the point facing up, kushos al Rava, questions or challenges to Rava, the inverted triangle, chuvos, we'll be using also a diamond to highlight the words Hacha and Hassam. Hacha, it means a reference to our case, the case of the vineyard, and Hassam, Rav Asi's case of a or we'll see again another situation. Our case, Hacha, the parties has contrasted with another case. We had Rav Asi's case and other cases. In making reference to other cases, we will remind ourselves also of the Shtar Mukdam case that Rabbi Yochanan had addressed back on Amud Aleph. So now let us turn to the Gemara. Maimar, we saw, said over Rova's ruling, Lo Nitani Kosev, that Shtar Mechira was not to have been written up in the first place, so along with its illegitimacy from the sale standpoint, we say that the guarantee written therein has no value either. Omar le Ravina lemreimar, Ela ha di Omar Rabbi Yochanan. That which Rabbi Yochanan said, back on Omer Aleph, we have a little star to the side of the text. You can align this with the star on Omer Aleph. That which Rabbi Yochanan said regarding the predated loan document. Rabbi Yochanan said the reason that one is not to collect from the lekuchos, the purchasers, even the subsequent purchasers. Gezeiro shemo yigva mizman rishon. We're fearful that if we allow the malve, the lender, to collect from the legitimate time, he'll end up collecting from the predated time as well. Why did Rabbi Yochanan use that as the reason for not collecting? Neimo, simply say, Lo nitan likosev. If Rava's logic is correct, simply say it's a document that should not have been written. So, and that's not what Rabbi Yochanan said. Lending, question to the answer. Amarle, Reimar responds. Hachi hashta, how can you compare that case of the Shtar Mukdam to the case of the sale of the vineyard? Hasam, in the case of the Shtar Mukdam, Nehi dolo nitan likosev mizman rishon, granted, it shouldn't have been written or dated from the first date, from the an hour, if you recall our example from 2 weeks earlier from the original loan, avol nitan likosev mizman sheni, it could have been written up as a with a proper date from the zman sheni, from the date of the actual loan. Hacha, in the case of this sale of the vineyard, lo nitan likosev klal, could not have been written up at all. There was no sale, zero sale. In that case, there was a loan. It was just a problem of the dating of the loan, but there was a legitimate loan. Here, there wasn't a legitimate sale to begin with. It had already been given to the lender's son as a gift beforehand. Ella. But I have a question. Ha de Sanya. Here we have a Tanaic source that is quoted only partially. Rashi shares the background. Before we read the source itself, one has to recognize that the source had described a person stole property and then sold it, and the purchaser, the one who bought from the thief, improved the land. He developed the land. In addition to produce, there was also land improvements. When the original owner comes along, he takes away the land from the purchaser, the one who bought from the thief. You know, you bought stolen property, so the original owner takes it back. Now, this thief sold it to the purchaser with a guarantee. So the guarantee, generally speaking, means that as far as the purchase price is concerned, you can recover that not only from the thief himself, from things that he's holding on to, but any properties he may have sold afterwards, after the sale to this particular purchaser. What about the purchaser's ability, the one who bought from the thief, what about his ability to seek compensation for the land improvements that he made? When the victim of the theft comes, he's going to take the land lock, stock, and barrel, along with the improvements. Those improvements are called shvach nechosim, or shvach karkois, karka being land. Now let's turn to the Gemara. So we have a source that says l'shvach karkois ketzad. With regard to compensation sought for improvements, how does that take place? So now we get the background that we already explained in our introduction. Someone stole property from a victim and sold it to someone else, to a purchaser. And the purchaser made land improvements. The purchaser must part with the land in favor of the original owner. So now you have a purchaser that not only did he pay for the land, not only did he pay the thief for the land, but he also made improvements. Kishu Goive, when this purchaser seeks compensation, Goive literally means when he comes to collect, Goive is a Karen Minechosim Ishu Abodim. He has a right to collect the principal value of the land, not only from the thief himself, but if the thief doesn't have any means of paying, he can collect from anyone who purchased property from the thief subsequent to his purchase. The shevach goyve minechosim b'nechorin. The land improvement value that he cannot collect from purchasers, but he can collect that from property that the thief may still be in possession of. What do we see here? We see compensation for property that was stolen, compensation for purchased, for buying stolen property. And not only that, but we see you can collect even from the mishubodim, from the lukuchos, which is very relevant to the case that Rava was discussing. Rava pointed out that if you have a shtar that is not to be written, you cannot collect at all. And therefore, Rava was addressing the case of the lender who tried to force the sale of that Mashkon vineyard, and Rava ruled that lender has no right to turn to the Mishubadim because lo nitan likosev. He had no right to seek compensation from any purchasers. So you couldn't possibly, says Rava, you couldn't possibly view it as a milveh b'shtar, because once again, we're repeating, it was lo nitan likosev. And as such, you can't go to the Mishubadim. Ah, what about what we see over here? Well, here we have a phony sale, Nemo lo nitan likosev. This purchaser bought land from a thief. It was an illegitimate sale. And yet we see in the source that he's entitled to collect the principal value from the Mishubadim, contrary to what Rava said. Hachi hashto. Once again, how can you compare the cases? Hasam, in the case of the thief that sold land. Now, it's true at the time of the sale, it was an illegitimate sale. However, the Gemara in Bava Kamma, I should say the Gemara earlier in this Masechta, explained that that gazlan, at a certain point, will try to legitimatize his sale of the property. And he'll do that by going to the victim, the one from whom he stole the land, and have him, the victim, sell the land to the thief. The thief is interested in maintaining the sale that he himself conducted to the purchaser. So the thief has an interest, and here there are different hesperim, again, from that which we saw in the first perek of this Masechta, what motivates the thief to behave thusly, but he is interested in maintaining, promoting this particular sale. So the Gemara cites from that which we learned earlier, Hossam, in the case of a thief that sold properties, one opinion says that the thief will go out of his way to buy the land in a legitimate fashion from the original owner to preserve his own good name, that he shouldn't be called a thief anymore. There's another opinion that says that he wants to be known as a trustworthy individual. The Gemara earlier gives a nafkamina, what difference is there between these two explanations, but that's not for us right now. But either way, whether he's doing it that he shouldn't be called a thief, or that he should be able to maintain a reputation of honesty, this thief, mefayis le lemore, umokim le lishtore, he will go to the original owner, try to appease him through buying the land from him, instead of what he originally did was he stole it from him. Now he's going to offer him money for the land, and that will make him lay the story. That will preserve, verify, give strength to the shtar, the bill of sale that he made with the purchaser. He meaning the goslin, the thief, made with the purchaser. So in that case. That the source was addressing that began with the words Lishvach Karkos toward the end of the narrow lines right above here, where we said that the purchaser from the thief can collect from the Nechosim Mishuvodim of the Gazlan. That Gazlan was actually interested in maintaining the sale, and he'll go out of his way to try to maintain that sale. Ha-ha. In the case of the Pardes that was sold, where the borrower gave the land to his son before selling it to the lender. His whole purpose, the borrower's whole purpose was to remove it, to seek its escape from the hands of this lender, the one who's been who had it as a mashkon, who's been there already for 3 years. He's trying to get it away from him, lavruche, to get it away from him, to ensure its escape from him. Shtara makayla, you think he'll try to maintain that bill of sale? Certainly not. So you can see a major contrast between the two cases, and hence we see a defense for Rava, that in the case Rava was addressing, he said, "Lo nitan likosev." Not only could it not have been written, but in that case, the seller, who happened to be the borrower, he'll do everything in his power to make sure that that sale doesn't go through. And that's why we say there it's not going to be viewed as a milva bishtar. However, in the case of lishvach karkois, there, the thief who sold the land to the purchaser will actually be interested in maintaining the sale that he conducted, and giving power, therefore, to that purchaser in seeking compensation even from the lukuchos, from the mishubadim. Before we go further, you can see we have a new Mishnah at hand, and on the side we have a nosei, clearly a general topic heading. Poiskin al peros. This is a term that we've seen it in the past, and v'hainu, what does that mean? V'hainu l'shalim achshav l'kabla schar achar zman. That involves with putting money down now for delivery of merchandise later on. Merchandise, in many cases, is a reference to fruits and grains, produce. In many cases, you're putting money down now, and when for a merchandise whose value may very well go up in value when delivery takes place. And that gets us into the problem of ribis, because I'm giving money to someone who is not delivering it instantly. Until he comes to deliver it, time lapses. And when delivery takes place, there is greater value being given back to the original party. And as we've said so many times since the beginning of this perek, when you have that, we'll call that lethal combination, namely time lapse and increased repayment, that has the seeds of ribis. The Mishnah. Ein poiskin al haperos ad shi'etzei hashar. One cannot put down money, pay for produce, until the public value or price has been established. Yotza hashar, once there is a public price for the produce, poiskin, you can pay your supplier. The afalpi she'ein lazeh, yesh lazeh, even if he doesn't have the produce, someone else has the produce and he can get it right now. And so when you speak about the instant delivery or instant acquisition, you avoid all ribis issues. Ribis, I know I might sound repetitive, but it's worth repeating. Ribis is tied intrinsically with the concept of delay. So that if you have a supplier that personally doesn't have the goods, but there's an established public price for that particular produce, your supplier can go to another supplier and get it for you right now. We continue in the Mishnah. Hoya hu tchila l'koytzrim. If you have someone that is an early harvester, there's no price yet established. It's just the beginning of the season, and there's a man that happens to have harvested his field, so he has his own supply of grains. Poisek imoy al hagodish v'al ha'ovid shel anovim v'al matan shel zeisim v'al ha'bitzim shel yotzer v'al ha'sij mishishoka b'kivshon. We have a number of examples. We'll try to go over them, but you're dealing with a person that has the goods. We have a number of different examples of that, and since he has the goods, you can give him money, whatever price you agree on. Since he has it, there's no issue of ribis, even though he may ship it to you sometimes later when the value has gone up. It doesn't matter, because he's got the stuff right now, and when you pay for it, it becomes yours. Even if you didn't, Rashi adds this point, even if you didn't make a kinyan, you didn't do mashiach on it, even if you didn't actually draw it, it's okay. It's as long as you have it, as long as the supplier has it, and you pay for it, there is no ribis problem. Now, the examples that we saw here included paying someone for a godish, is a literally a pile of grain. In other words, you're buying grain from someone who has a pile of grain, or he has an ovid shel anovim. Rashi explains this is a vessel that in which you store harvested grapes, whereby they warm up until wine pressing time comes. Similarly, is the ma'aton shel zeisim, where olives are piled up in anticipation of their being pressed, and bitzim shel yotzer. Yotzer is a potterer who fashions vessels from clay. So you have the bitzim is the clay in its raw form. He has that, so you can purchase vessels from a potterer, as long as he already has the material for making those pots or those vessels even though there is no price yet established for those things. Valhasid, Mishishoka Bekivshan, seed is lime that's produced from burning rocks. So if you have someone that has rocks and he has the fuel for burning them, you can purchase from him lime, even though there is no public price yet established for the lime. Upoisek imoy al hazevel kol yemoy sashana. Zevel is fertilizer. Fertilizer is in the time of the Gemara and the Mishnah. We've seen these things, these examples before, from refuse of fruits, vegetables that's trampled upon by the public. You also have another form of zevel is in the form of animal dung. Rabbi Yossi says, I should say the Tanakhama says, you can pay someone for zevel at any time of the year. The next opinion, Rabbi Yossi Amar le'olam ein poiskan ala zevel elim kein hoysalo zevel ba'ashpa. Rabbi Yossi treats the zevel similar to the way the Tanakhama was treating the other items, and that is, you can only if he has the zevel, the fertilizer, in the ashpa. Ashpa is where the zevel is piled up. The chachomim matirin. The chachomim are lenient and don't have that requirement. Upoisek imoy b'shar hagavoa. We take a look at Rashi at the end of the narrow lines. Upoisek imoy b'shar hagavoa. Im yifchois hashar mima shehu achshav titein li kishar hazol. You pay money, and the understanding is that if the cost of the produce falls, it becomes cheaper, you will get delivery of the produce at that lower rate. So that if you put down $1 for a pound of apples, and later on a pound of apples costs half a dollar. So you put $1 down, you'd be entitled to get 2 pounds. Rashi continues and says, Shar HaGavoa, that term, Hainu Bezoil, it means the cheap rate. Shinoisnim Peros. Harbei bedomim lotim. You get a lot of fruits for little money. The word gavoa literally means high up. It's high up in terms of fruit, a high quantity of fruit for the same amount of money that you originally paid for. At the time that you paid for it, you would have received a lesser quantity. At the time of delivery, that same amount of money will get you more. So the Tanakhama says you can make and you can establish that the you want to receive that quantity of produce, that the money I'm paying for you now will be able to get. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afal Pi Shelo Posak Imo B'Shar HaGavoa Yochol Lomar Tain li koze, o tain li es maosai. Rabbi Yehuda says, even if you didn't formally make that arrangement, you can nevertheless demand either you give me the fruits at their cheaper rate, or give me back my money. Rashi says on the first wide line, Yochol hu lomar lo kshira sharazol, when the customer, when the purchaser sees that the price has fallen, tain li koze o tain li mo'osai sharei lo moshach. The purchaser didn't draw the fruits. There was no kinyan made. V'yochol afser bo, he can back out. V'afilu misha para leka. And contrary to cases where people back out after paying money, they subject themselves to the mi shepara curse. That leko, that is not here. He didn't pay the money to get delivery right now. He paid the money in order to get delivery later on. And in the meantime, the price has changed. The standard mindset of people is to get the most out of their money. So that even without a formal agreement at the outset to this effect, Rabbi Yehuda says, you can demand the cheaper rate or your money back. The Gemara. We have a topic heading on the side. Ein poiskin al haperos ad sheyetze shar shishor lizman memushach. The idea mentioned in the mission of putting money down for fruits is allowed only when the price is established. Rabbi Yochanan will tell us we want to have a situation where it's a long-lasting, let's say, reliable price that I know will continue. It won't fluctuate. Omer Avasi, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Poiskin al Shar Shebeshuk. Now, he says something that is not clear. We can translate it, but it would seem to run counter to things we've said. The Gemara will clarify this later on. But he says that you cannot pay money to a supplier on based on the price in the market. Omar lei Rabbi Zera l'Ravasi. So Rabbi Zera asks Ravasi, who quoted Rabbi Yochanan, Om Rabbi Yochanan afilu kedurmus hazeh? Would Rabbi Yochanan have said his point that you can't put money down even if a price has been established in this durmus? Rashi says itliz rav golo. It's a very large, big itlis. Itlis, generally speaking, is a butchery. For our purposes, though, Rav Zera is asking, is Rav Yochanan saying that you can't rely, even if the price has been established in this large store? Omar lei. So Ravasi answers, lo omar Rav Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, who said, "Ein poiskin ela b'shuk shel ayoros, delo kvi tarayu." The town markets, the price that is found in town markets, which is not a fixed, reliable price. It's not kavur. It's not an established tarayu. Their price is not established, meaning something that will be maintained. But if you have something like the durmus that was just referred to, that's a price when the durmus sets a price, that's a price that will last, that you can rely upon. It won't fluctuate. Ulaman de solik adaitin meikora. According to the thinking, the Yavetz suggests a more accurate reading, Ulamai, the Solik, Adaitin Meikara, according to what that which was thought in the original question, when Rabbi Zera asked Ravasi, would Rabbi Yochanan have said is then even with the Durmus, the thinking then, the Omer Rabbi Yochanan afilu kedurmus hazeh, would Rabbi Yochanan have said his din that you don't rely on the price even of the durmus elamas nisin de kotani, but the Mishnah that taught ein poiskin ala peris achi yotze hashar yotze hashar poiskin hefi mishkachas lomas nisin. The Mishnah says when yotze hashar, when the price is established, we do allow payment of money for later delivery. Well, if according to the thinking that you can't rely on the price even in the durmus, so what was the Mishnah talking about? In other words, Rabbi Yochanan knew the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan knew that there's a concept of yotzah hashar poiskin. How can Rabbi Yochanan have said something contradictory to the Mishnah that you don't poiskin on shar, even a shar that's reliable like the durmus, when the Mishnah teaches Yotze Shar Poskin? So, Heichi Mishkachas Lomas Nisan, under what circumstance, how do you find a case that would be relevant accurate as far as the Mishnah is concerned, according to the Hava Mina in Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara answers, the case that the Mishnah would have been referring to, according to the Hava Mina, Bechiti da'achlebi va'arbi demoshuch tarei tfei. Let's take a look at Rashi. The Rashi that we'll look at is in the wide lines, third line under the Gemara text. Ba'achlebi ba'arbi. Mishiaschilu bale batim v'oitzri peros. Liftoyach oitzri seim. From the point in time that produce owners and oitzri peros, people that store up produce, open up their silos, their warehouses. Usfinois bois benorim vias tvolim koran. Boats come laden with grain for sale. At that point, there is a price that is established, that's announced, and that is a price that will last a long time. Of course, Rabbi Yochanan, it was acknowledged above that not only under those circumstances, but even in circumstances that would characterize the dormus mentioned before, that also is a price that one could rely on to pay money and expect delivery later on. Tana Rabbanan. Ein poiskin al haperus ad sheyetze hashar. Yotza hashar poiskin. Once a public price is established, you can pay money for produce. Even if your supplier, afalpi she'ein lozeh, even if this one doesn't have, yesh lozeh, someone else does have, so that your payment is effective for establishing in our mind's eye immediate acquisition. True, in practical terms, in reality, delivery might take place later and the produce will go up in value later on. There's no problem of ribis because we are looking at that increased value as if it took place in your possession already. The house marking is featured on the side under the Mivneh, where we've written Shnei Dugmois, two examples, Le Matzavim Shel Peros Be'echios Shainos, that deal with fruits of different qualities. The double underline marking, you'll see, highlights Havlota Laharois Hadimyon Ben Shnei Hadugmois. Want to try to highlight the similarity between these cases, so we'll do that with this double underline marking. The Gemara. Hayu Chadoshois Me'arba V'yishonos Mishalosh. The fresh grains are cheaper. They're four saw for a sella. The word arba is a rather abbreviated expression, but it's a reference to four. Four saw. Saw is a measure, a dry measure, that you would get if you pay a sella. A sella is a unit of currency. Vishonos, the dried grain, which is more valuable, you can make flour from dried grain. You don't have to wait. You can make it immediately. It has immediate use for you, as opposed to the chadoshes, the fresh grains, you have to wait. So the yeshanos is more valuable, it's more expensive. Mishalosh. So given circumstances like that, where you're in a place that the new grains go for four saw per sella, the aged or dry grains go for three saw per sella. You notice you'll get only three saw if you pay a sella, whereas with the chadoshes, if you pay a sella, you get more. It's cheaper. Ein poiskin ala chadoshes. The ala chadoshes we're adding based on Rashi's girsa. Ein poiskin ala chadoshes ad shiyetze hashar lechadosh uliyoshan. You're not to pay money for delivery of grains until the price of the two are equal, namely until the yeshanas will say drop in price. That you get four saw of even yeshanos for a sella.
another, a similar situation. Hayu lekutos me'arba ulecholo de mishalosh. Lekutos, literally translated, be gathered. It's a reference to grains that someone gathers from different fields. You have different qualities mixed together. That's considered a less desirable situation. There's an additional element explained in Rashi. I mentioned different qualities, but not only that, there might be different types of grains mixed in together. It's not pure wheat. I think that the pure wheat is more desirable than having mixed grains. So those are the lekutos. Hayu lekutos me arba, and lechol adam mishalosh. Lechol adam is a reference to people that own their own fields. They're not collecting grains from a variety of fields. So there you would be getting the pure stuff. So the lekutos cost 4 saw per sela. The pure is 3 saw per sela. Ein poiskin in balabatim me arba ad shietze ashar leloike ulamocher. Again, we're reading with Rashi's girsa, which is saying you don't put down money until the balabayas or the chol odom rate is gone down to 4 saw per sela. Omar Rav Nachman, poiskin lelekutos kishar halekutos. Rav Nachman says you can go directly to the lekutos for delivery of lekutos type quality grain at the lekutos price. Omar le Ravel Rav Nachman, my shna loikate the e isle the e lesle Yosef mi lokut chavre. When we use the term poiskin, it's becoming clearer as we go on in the Gemara. That's a reference to putting money down, even to someone that doesn't have the goods. So Rav Nachman is telling us you can put money down to a person that collects grains from a variety of fields, even if he doesn't have the stuff, he can borrow it from his colleague, his fellow locate, and that you allow paying a locate for locate lekutos quality grain at the lekutos price. Well, balabayas nami yosef melokut, why wouldn't you allow paying a balabayas buy from him lekutos quality grain? Even if he doesn't have lekutos quality grain, he can go to someone that does have the lekutos. He can go to one of the field collectors and borrow from him the grain and provide it to you. Omar Lei, Rav Nachman answers, the reason that I don't accept that or don't allow that, in other words, if you're dealing with lekutos quality grain, you can do so only with someone that collects grain in that fashion. Not to a balabayas who produces wheat. And he explains why the distinction. Omarle, balabayas zila be milsa lemezaf milokut. It's beneath the dignity of the balabayas. The balabayas, my understanding is, he simply won't do it. It's zila be milsa. It's an insult to him. It's beneath his dignity. He's proud of his produce, of his reputation as a wheat producer. So it's beneath his dignity to go and borrow grains from a lokut. Iboy Esema, another reason for the restriction. Mandioev Zuzi Lebalabayas, one who gives money to a private grain producer, Apiri Shapirioev, he gives it with the intent of getting high quality stuff. So it's simply not going, you're not going to be doing that. You're not going to be giving money to a balabayas, to a person, a private wheat producer, and expect to get the poor quality stuff delivered. As we go on, you notice a slash mark indicating a new train of thought. A crown marking will appear shortly. And on the side of the Gemara, there are no say, mivne heading. The crown highlights Rav Huna. Birur Shitas Rav Huna. We'll try to analyze, clarify Rav Huna's opinion. Im Lovin al Shar Shebeshuk. That's a term that is found in the Gemara. What does that mean? Lovin al Shar Shebeshuk. Rashi has two approaches. I think that we'll be adopting in our explanation the first of the two approaches. Let us look together at the Rashi, even before we get into the Gemara, five lines from the end of the Rashi commentary. Ein lovin al shar shebeshuk, ani shomati, as I heard, ein lovin mois bederech havo, al menas, shim lo ashalim loch mois, adzman ploni, etein loch peros kishar shalachshov. I want to borrow money, and we're saying this you're not to do, where a borrower says, if I don't pay you by a certain date, I will give you fruits according to the current price. The current price of fruits, if let us say someone borrowed $10 for 2 months, now at the beginning of the loan period, $10 would get you 10 pounds of apples. What the Gemara is saying, you cannot borrow money, saying that I will, if I don't give you in 2 months' time $10, I will give you 10 pounds of apples. That's what $10 could buy right now when I'm borrowing the money from you. Ah, but 2 months later, the 10 pounds of apples might be worth $20. Even though in a sale situation this is allowed, this is what we've been discussing all along, the whole concept of poiskin ala peros miyot hashar. So even though that in a purchase form, in the purchase arrangement, that's allowed. Derech hava aser, but in a loan situation where the subsequent delivery of the fruits at the current price, we'll call it current low price, since it's the delivery of the fruits is in payment of a loan, not as a result of a purchase, that becomes forbidden. Now the Gemara. Omar Rav Sheshes, Omar Rav Huna, Ein Lovin Al Shar Shebeshuk. One is not to borrow money with the option of paying back the loan based on the current market price of the produce. In other words, the payback of the loan would be through produce based on the current market value of the produce. Omar Le, Rav Yosef Bar Chamo, the Rav Sheshes, and now another version of names, Omar Le, Rav Yosef Bar Abo, instead of Bar Chamo, Bar Abo, Le Rav Sheshes, Umi Omar Rav Huna Hochi, would Rav Huna have said thusly, Vaha Bo Imine Me Rav Huna. The question was asked of Rav Huna. Hani b'nei b'rav, diyazvi b'tishri. These yeshiva students, the Torah students, they're b'nei b'rav, diyazvi b'tishri. They borrow money in Tishrei. Upari, Rashi adds the word peros, upari peros b'teves. Shari Osir, and they pay back the loan in Teves with fruits. Is that allowed or not? Omar Lahu, and Rav Huna said, in so many words, it's allowed. What did Rav Huna say? Ha chiti behini va chiti beshili iboi zavni upari le. Hini and Shili, these are names of places. We've seen them referred to in earlier Gemaras. He says that, look, the wheat, if that's a reference to the peros that would be paid back with, the wheat is available right now. If they wanted to buy the wheat now, they could buy it. So since the wheat is available now. It can be used as a means of paying back the loan later on. So we see that Rav Huna is lenient. Why then did Rav Huna say above, Ein lovin al shar shebashuk? So the Gemara answers, Meikara savar Rav Huna ein lovin. What Rav Sheshes opened up the sugya, this discussion, was actually something that Rav Huna thought originally. Kevan deshama laha, diomar of Shmuel bar Chia amar Belozer, lovin. When Rav Huna heard this teaching in the name of Rabbi Elazar that it is allowed, Omar Yunami, Lovin, Rav Huna accepted that lenient ruling and said that you can do that. You can borrow money in Tishrei at an earlier time and pay back with, if you're not going to pay back with cash, you can pay back the loan with fruits, with the amount of fruits that the money that you receive now would be able to acquire. Namely, the amount of fruits that the money you receive now would be able to acquire right now, you'll pay back that quantity of fruits later on. Even if that quantity of fruit is worth more than the loan money you received. Because the loan money that you received, at that point, you could have already bought that produce with which to pay back the lender. The Gemara, as it goes on, first you notice in our mark, Gemara's a slash mark indicating a new trend of thought. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a Mivne, structural note, where a diamond appears. The diamond highlights Dugmois Shalochas Chur Mi Mokum Hazir Le Mokum Hayoyker. We'll see examples of transportation of produce, of merchandise. Of Schora is a term referring to doing business with merchandise, and when we use the term merchandise, we also include the idea of or the example of produce. So the theme in this upcoming Gemara has to do with the transport of the goods from a location where it's cheap to a location where it is more expensive. Tanu Rabbanan, Hamoylich Chavila. Chavila literally is a package or a bundle. Mokaim lemokaim, from a place where it is cheap to a place where it's expensive. Motze chaver v'yomarlo. Someone comes along and sees I'm carrying this chavila. I'm starting off in Cheapsville, and this guy comes along and says v'yomarlo, t'no li, give me your chavila, give me your merchandise. Va'ani ele alecha k'derech shemalin lecha boisamokom, and I will pay you money. I'll pay you later on, but I'll pay you money for an amount that you would have been able to fetch for it in that place. Rashi, at the very bottom, Tinali Volichena, I'll take your chavila, I'll take your merchandise, and I'll sell it in the. I'll get cash for it. The eset sorchai b'mois, and I'll do whatever I need to do with my money. I'll make investments and make a lot of money in the meantime. Azman ploni, until a certain time, so that notice the time delay element here. That already starts that creates in our mind a warning light starts to blink. Time delay. And not only do you have that, but you also have greater value payback. So you've got all the elements of ribis over here. Can this possibly be allowed? Where the fellow coming along will take the package the owner would agree to it. He doesn't get his money immediately. He'll get his money later, but he's going to get more. Because right here, the chavila is cheap. It would be sold. He could get more money for it in that expensive location. But the owner is... the owner is being presented with this option of not traveling there at all. He'll stay put, and he'll get that higher price from this guy later on. Ribbis, as we've seen so many times on a Torah level, figures when you're dealing with a loan. What's the nature of a loan? A loan is that type of a money or payback that is guaranteed. You as the lender of it, you are guaranteed its return. There's no claim that can be made by the borrower that would exempt him from paying back the loan. You've got to pay it back, even if you have circumstances beyond your control, even if onus circumstances caused you a financial loss, we don't care. You have to pay back the loan. That's onus and any other claim, which makes it, as I say, a guaranteed payback, which you don't find in other areas of law. Even in the case of someone who borrows an item to use, as opposed to borrowing cash, someone who borrows an item for use, there are cases where he could be exempt, where if, for example, the item breaks in the course of normal use. Not so in the case of a loan. So that that element of guaranteed return is critical before we can say that there is a problem of interest. If that element is not present, namely, there is in fact an element of risk involved where you are not guaranteed the return, then there's room for allowing it. So now we go on in the Gemara. We continue at the top of Daf Ayin Gimel. Birshus Moicher Mutter. If this Chavila remains in the domain of the owner until it is sold, until it is sold in the more expensive place, then this arrangement is allowed. Namely, the chavila, if it gets lost or whatever, stolen or destroyed en route, that owner won't see his money. He's accepting responsibility until it gets to the mokam hayoker, where it's sold for the high price. So up till that time, up till the time it's sold at the high price, it's not a loan. Why? Because it remains under the guise of the original owner. And as we said, just we'll repeat, if it gets lost at that point, he's not going to see any value. He's accepted a responsibility up to that point. So it's not a loan. When does it become a loan? When it's sold at the high price? Oh, at that point, the fellow that came along, he then starts to bear responsibility, but it's only at that point that it became a loan. So that, and that's the amount, not an increased amount, that's the amount that is said to be a loan, and that's the amount that will be repaid, not any increase. In terms of practical considerations, that fellow, when he sells the chavila in that place where where it's more expensive, he will take the money, he'll use it for his own investments, he'll enjoy the money, try to profit from it. That's his personal interest. But it's only at that point in time that he sells it at the high price that it's considered a loan. And once again, why? Because it's only at that point that he starts to bear responsibility. Up till that point, it wasn't the we'll call it the customers, or the fellow that came along, wasn't his responsibility. However, birshus lokeach chaser, if immediately the the fellow who came along starts to bear responsibility from the point in time that he took it at in the cheap location, it became a loan at that point. So it became a loan at that point with the anticipated payback of a greater amount of money. That's prohibited. So Birshus Lokeach, if it became the Lokeach, the customer's responsibility immediately, then it's forbidden. Hamoylich Peros mi Mokoim Lemokoim, one who is transporting produce, fruits from one place to another, from from a cheap location to an expensive location. Motzei Chaveru v'yomar lo, someone comes along and says, makes the following offer. Tnom li, give me those fruits. I want to eat them right here. Rashi adds that point. V'oichlam kan, I want to eat them here. V'ani ele l'cho peros shiyesh li v'oisem okim. And I, after a while, we add here the idea of Lizman Ploni, a certain time, later date, I will give you from fruits that I have, the Oisamoka means in the more expensive place. So, again, superficially, this guy is getting fruits now in cheap place, and will be repaying with fruits in expensive place. Im yeshlo peros boisimokoi mutter. If this fellow who has come along happens to have fruits right now in that more expensive place, then this arrangement is allowed. Ve'im lav, if he doesn't have fruits in that more expensive place, usur, then it is prohibited. Rashi adds a detail that I think makes this a little more understandable. Rashi says, "Ein lo ba'oisem okoim." If this fellow that came along doesn't have right now fruits in that more expensive place, usur, then it would be prohibited for him at that later time to give this original owner fruits. De bischar hamtonoso nosan loy ze be mokom hayoker. Because in that case where he doesn't have fruits that concerning which we can say that there's immediate transfer of ownership, rather than we would view it as in reward or in payment for the original owner's willingness to wait. He, the fellow that came along, is as a result willing to give him the fruits in that more expensive place. And that is, of course, usur. The Gemara continues, v'hachamorim malin b'mokum hayoker k'b'mokum hazoil v'einon choshishin. This Gemara is terse. Rashi offers a thorough explanation. Let's learn it together. V'hachamorim malin b'mokum hayoker k'b'mokum hazoil v'ein choshishin. First of all, the word chamoren is a reference from the word chamor, donkey. These are donkey drivers that were, in effect, merchants, grain merchants. Hachamorim hamistakrim betvua. These are people that profited from sales of grain. Umevien mimokoim hazer lemokom hayoker. They transported grain that they would acquire in Cheapsville and sell it in expensive town. Mutter lahem likach mois mi bale batim ashirim bemokom hayoker. These chamorim are allowed to take cash from men of means in expensive town. Almanas liten lahem lizman ploni haperois kishar mokom hazoil. In expensive town, we'll say $100, would get you 100 pounds of apples. In Cheap Town, $100 will get you 120 pounds of apples. So we are allowing, in this section of Gemara, these chamorim to take cash, $100, in a community where $100 would get you only 100 pounds of apples, and these chamorim will provide these balabatim, these customers, the chamorim will provide them with 120 pounds of apples. And that delivery will only take place later on. There's a time delay element. And Rashi goes on, and we're not going to view this as ribis, as interest in exchange for waiting for the delivery later on. Now, again, on the surface of things, this doesn't look so kosher. You have a case where the chamorim are getting from the Bali Batim Ashirim, from the rich folk in Rich Town. Chamorim are getting $100, and they're in effect going to be delivering them $100, which equals 100 pounds of apples. And in they will be delivering 120 pounds of apples later on. And that's allowed. My taimo. So here we get into why is that the case. So we have two explanations, and both of these explanations we will need to learn the Rashi on them. So first we'll read the Gemara and then go through the Rashi. Rav Popo Amar, Nicha Luhu Demagluhu Tara. Before we translate, in contrast to interest, as we learned at the beginning of the perek, the Torah refers to it as neshech, biting. It's something that a person pays, but it's a loss to him when the borrower pays the interest. So it's painful to him. He's losing that extra amount beyond the principal. It's true that because he borrowed the money, so he can pay off he can pay for things that are urgent or what have you. But that's the principal. That's the actual loan that helps him for that. But now, as a result of getting the loan, he has to now pay more than he received. That's painful. We will see here that these chamorim that are going to be delivering apples an amount more than they would have been able to buy in this location, they, by getting the cash, are profiting immediately. There's immediate benefit to them. And Rashi explains. Oh, actually, let's read the Gemara first. We didn't do that. My time is Rav Popa says Nichalu Demagulu Taro, and Rav Acha Braid Raviko Amar Nichaluhu Demoisli Gabayu. And now the Rashi. My time is Rav Popa Omar Nicha Luhu Demaglu Luhu Taro. But by the way, I think just before we go further, it's important just to remind ourselves of a theme that is constantly recurring here. The people here, these Balabatim Ashirim, are giving the money to these Chamorim. They're giving it to them not as a loan per se. They're giving it to buy the produce. They just want to get a better price, a bigger bang out of their buck than they would get for it over here. So we're dealing, first of all, not with a situation of a straightforward loan, but a purchase. That already reduces the severity of the matter. And we are now going to explain how these merchants are gaining immediate benefit by having the cash. So Rashi says, "My time all, Rapopo Amar Nichalahu Demaglu Lutara, Sha'al Yedei Ma'oisef Shelzeh, through having their money, through the Chamorim having the money of the Balabate Mashirim, Haim, they, the merchants, the Chamorim, Nikorim Socharim, they become recognizable as merchants. People who have, let's say, big wads of bills in their pocket, or lots of cash clinking around as they walk along, you would assume that they're businessmen. So by their having cash, they are nikur, they're recognizable as merchants. Umakirim oisam bale batim shelmokam azoil, and the producers, the suppliers in Cheapsville, will recognize these chamorim as merchants. V'noisnim lahem ba'akofa, and they will give them produce on credit. U'mistakrim etzlam, and they profit. V'afilu lohoyo ze mamtin lahem shum zman, elo lohovi lo miyad. And here, this, I believe, is a critical element. In the case of these balabat mashirim and the chamorim, these chamorim would be willing to deliver their produce immediately, even without waiting. Rather, to bring it immediately. Noach lohem litrach lios shluchim lekabaleim achrayas haderech al kach. It's beneficial for them to trouble themselves, to be shluchim, agents, and even to accept upon themselves any guarantee, which we know is a real problem in general. But there's immediate benefit, and as Rashi added, that the whole arrangement with regard to these merchants and their taking of the money could be viewed as taking of the money with intent to deliver immediately the goods, without any time delay element built in. And they would still have done it. And because of this benefit, by the cash that they have publicizes them as merchants, which has far-reaching positive implications for them. That is Rav Popo's explanation. That's Maglu Luhu Tara. And now Rav Acha spoke in terms of Mosli Gabayu. Rashi says the Mosli Gabayu, B'nei Mokum Hazoil, the suppliers in Cheapsville, will actually give them a discount. In other words, you're already in Cheapsville, and you'll get a discount. These Chamorim will get a discount. K'sheshoymin, when they hear She'ein Elu Mistakrin Bo, when they hear that these Chamorim, they're going to take the $100 they got, and they're going to buy 120 pounds of apples in Cheapsville and deliver those apples as they are in Expensive Town. So the Chamorim aren't making any money vis-a-vis their purchase in Cheapstown. Once again, in Cheapstown, they're taking $100, they're getting 120 pounds of apples, and they're going to deliver those apples as they are. So as far as the people as far as the suppliers in Cheapsville are concerned, boy, these guys aren't going to be making anything from the produce we're supplying. So what happens? When they hear that, the suppliers, Moisli Gabayu, they'll give them the 120 pounds of apples for $90 instead of $100. For $90, we'll give you a discount. Kedei shelo yimshichu yedeim milahargil etzlam, so as to ensure that these chamorim will not literally withdraw their hands, but be regular customers. So they'll offer them incentive, so that when they
they'll end up paying only $90. They'll be able to pocket $10. Or I said they'll be able to pocket $10 while delivering the 120 pounds of apples to the people in Expensiveville. So what we just saw are two explanations of why this is allowed. The merchants stand to gain either recognition as being merchants. That was the Maglulutaro idea that Rav Popa spoke of. And being known as merchants, that benefits them. They can then get stuff delivered, stuff supplied to them on credit. And you have the Mosley Gabayo, the possibility of their getting a discount in Sheepsville from the suppliers. My Binayu, what is the difference in practical terms? Where would there be a difference between the Rav Popa explanation versus the Rav Acha explanation? Ika Binayu, and again, we'll read the Gemara, but we'll have to learn the Rashi before understanding it. Ika Binayu, a point of difference or a case where there would be a difference, is Tagra Chadita. Rashi, Tagra Chadita. Tagar is a merchant. Chadita literally means new. Tagar She'eno Nikur Adayin. A merchant that's not known, doesn't have a merchant's reputation yet. As we go on in the Rashi, I'll just take note that the Vilna Goin, the Gro, and the Hagoyis HaGro points out that there are those that explain this in an opposite fashion from what we'll see now in the Rashi. But Rashi says, Laman de Omar de Maglu Lehu Taro Ika. According to the Maglu Taro approach, which was Rav Popa's approach, this exists. That namely, this the money that they have will publicize that they are merchants, and they will then be able to get produce or merchandise on credit. L'mandamar de Moisli Gabayu Leka. According to Rav Acha's approach, that the merchants will get a discount in Sheepsville, Leka. That is not the case when you're dealing with an unknown merchant, the Tagra Chadita. The Cave of the Eno Nikurlahem, since this guy is a new guy, he's a new merchant, he's not known in Sheepsville as a merchant. Ein ma'minim b'dvarav shu noisnam b'mekoymoy b'zoil v'lo mozli gabe. The suppliers in Sheepsville won't believe him when he tells them that he's going to be delivering the produce in expensive town in accordance with the rate in Sheepstown and not make any profit. And as a result of that, because they won't believe him, they're not going to give him the discount that we mentioned earlier. Now we go back to the Gemara. Besura is a name of a location. And at the end of the line, you see Kafri, two locations. Besura, Asli, Arba'a. Sura, we'll call it an expensive town. It's the name of a town, and things were expensive. That Rashi says, four grivi would cost the zuz. Grivi is a measure. We use often the term sa'a for a zuz. But Kafri, Aslin, Shiso. In Kafri, things were cheaper. You could get for one zuz, you get six grivi, six measures. Yohiv Rav was the head of Sura. So Rav lived in Expensiveville. Yohiv Rav Zuzi Lechamri, Rav gave a zuz to the Chamorim. He gave the cash in Expensiveville. The Kabul Ole Oinsa de Urcha. And Rav accepted upon himself, if there's any oinus en route, you don't have to compensate me. I accept that upon myself. So you're dealing with something that's not, doesn't even look like a loan. So Rav put down one zuz to the Chamorim in Sura. V'shokil minayhu
Chamisha. And he would accept for, he would then take from them for the zuz that he gave them. He would take five griva. Av nishkol shisa. Why doesn't he take six? After all, he, Rav, accepted upon himself ein sedurcha. There's no ribis. We saw before, even if he didn't accept ein sedurcha, these chamorim would only be only too happy to cooperate with this. The whole discussion we had just before. Why doesn't he go for the full amount that he's entitled to? These chamorim, after all, are going to go from Surah to Kafri, and Kafri, one zuz would get you six zuz. Why doesn't Rav take advantage of that and take the full six grivi for the zuz that he paid? The Gemara answers, Odom Choshuv Shaini. A man of great distinction is different. He accepts on himself, we'll say, a higher... higher standard of behavior, more restrictive standard of behavior, so as to avoid any possible doubt in anyone's mind. So he behaved thusly. In other words, by letter of the law, he certainly was entitled to receive six grivi for the zuz that he put down. Bo mine Rav Asi Rav Yochanan, ma'u lasois begrutois kain. Rav Asi asks Rav Yochanan, can we do the same thing with grutos? Rashi says, Ma'u lasos grutos kein b'shar pragmatia. Other forms of merchandise, not fruits and vegetables and grains, but other forms of merchandise. Go and shivrei zov, Rashi says, through the end of the narrow lines, like gold filings, v'kesef, silver filings, sharmine matris, other forms of metal. Mi amrinon, do we say tevua? When it comes to grains, there's constant commerce with grains. There's back and forth all the time. There, the considerations that would benefit the merchants were quite obvious, quite evident. Either the maglutaro idea, which eventually led to them getting stuff on credit, or getting a discount in Chiefsville. But other kinds of merchandise where you don't have this constant element that Rashi made reference to, the line before. But other kinds of merchandise, you don't have those considerations. Demisha Mochalo Afshav, anyone who sold now all the different types of metals, Lo Yimkar Lo Lomochar, it's not something that he's going to sell the next day, more metals. Upragmatish Lokachayom, Eno Lokeach Mochar. Merchandise that you bought today, you're not going to buy tomorrow. So kind of a one-time purchase, or the intervals are much longer. So it doesn't have the same characteristics of the grain arrangement we were discussing above. So that was the question posed to Rav Asi. Can you give merchants money in Expensiville for them to give you a greater quantity of merchandise that same amount of money would buy for you in Cheapsville? In other words, they'll deliver to you the same quantity of the quantity of merchandise that money would get for you in Cheapsville and deliver it to them in Expensiveville. Omar Lay, so Rabbi Yochanan said, Bikesh Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi Lassos came Bekli Pishton Velo Nicho Rebbe. This is the first of two versions of what happens here, where Rabbi Yochanan says that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi wanted to do that with linens. In other words, he wanted to give merchants, he was in Expensiveville, he wanted to give merchants money and get an amount of linens that money would be able to acquire in Cheapsville. Velohi Nicho Rebbe. Rebbe did not allow him. Ikot the Amri, another version of names and items. Bikesh Rebbe, Lasus Bigrutois Kane. Rebbe wanted to do that with metals. Rabbi Yossi would not allow it. In both of these examples, whether it's clay pitched on linens or metals, it doesn't. They don't have the characteristics of grains, of the constant merchandising of it, and as a result, the considerations that were reason for leniency offered by Rav Papa and Rav Acha don't apply, and therefore there is the restriction. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.